Welcome and thank you for joining us on the Stay Healthy South Sound podcast, where we want to give you tips on staying healthy and even expose common myths about health and aging so you can enjoy a healthier and active life in the amazing South Sound. Brought to you by Dr. Jennifer Penrose, owner of Penrose & Associates Physical Therapy.
Welcome to the Stay Healthy South Sound podcast. And for those of you who don't know me, my name is Dr. Jennifer Penrose. I'm a physical therapist in Lacey, Washington. Been practicing for about 20 years, and I opened Penrose Physical Therapy Clinic in 2007. Today, instead of interviewing a guest, I will be talking about my new book called Run Forever, Solutions to Knee Pain, Achilles, Plantar Fasciitis, Hip Pain, Back Pain, and More. And really, this book came out of my desire to try and highlight patient stories that I've ran into in the clinic in a way that people would relate to and understand to common problems with running and walking, quite frankly. So the injuries with walking and running are similar, because when you walk and run, it's one footfall after the next. Running, there's just a little more impact involved. And so there are some slight differences, but really there are more similarities than there are differences. So I'm going to cover in this book, it covers, you know, why does it hurt when I run or walk, and what should you do first? Who can help you? I go over knee pain, specifically patellofemoral syndrome, arthritis, and then the second most common injury is Achilles tendons. The third most common running injury is iliotibial band, which is a band on the outside of your knee, so the outside knee pain. Plantar fasciitis, stress, shin splints, hip pain and bursitis, hip flexor, and piriformis, low back injuries. And then the rest of the book really goes on to recommended tips and exercises and with pictures, and it has links to YouTube videos for a dynamic warm-up and foam rolling, stretching, core, has all kinds of great practical things. So hopefully it gives you a little outline of the book. But today I kind of want to focus on a couple of patient stories in there when it comes to how some of these injuries with walking and running develop. So one that I want to highlight is, I'll tell you a story about a lady in her 30s, and we'll call her Amy. She had lower leg pain that was on the outside of her lower leg on and off for 15 years. And now it was to the point where she was unable to walk for more than 2 minutes without burning, throbbing pain. So she couldn't even keep up with her six-year-old daughter. It was pretty disheartening. It would go away after she'd stop walking by like just standing still or sitting down, but she'd have to sit there for about, you know, 10 minutes or so. And she'd been to many doctors. She tried some rigid orthotics that didn't help. She'd tried physical therapy before, and they did that deep tissue massage and scraping. And that's where they take kind of an instrument and kind of get in there and release scar tissue. And she was given stretches and exercises, but she said nothing really made a lasting difference. So she was pretty skeptical about me being able to help her as well. But I did ask her if anyone had videotaped her walking, her gait, and she said no. So I figured that was likely the missing puzzle piece. So I evaluated her foot structure and then did a few other tests. But the primary thing I did was videotaped her walking technique on the treadmill, barefoot and in shoes, and then played it back in slow motion. And what we could see is that her foot type is one that doesn't absorb shock really well. So it's more of a rigid foot, and she stays on the outside part of her foot for too long of a time. So that you can understand how that would overload the outer part of your leg if you're staying on the outside too long. And it made it those tissues work too hard, and that was absorbing all the impact. And that is why she'd get that burning pain pretty quickly on the outside of her lower leg. So that was causing her to break down. So you see, when you have normal walking mechanics, you can land on that outside part of your foot, and then you kind of, what we call pronation in the medical world, you kind of absorb the impact, and kind of your foot kind of flattens a little bit to absorb that. Pronation's got a bad reputation in the sense that if you do it too severely, too much, or too stay there too long, then you have kind of too much pronation, and that leads to other problems, and people end up having to get really supportive shoes for those reasons. So pronation isn't bad in and of itself. It's a matter of how far you go with it and how long you stay in it during your walking and running cycle. So back to my story about Amy. So no amount of massage or acupuncture or stretching or exercise was going to fix this issue long term. Hers was a biomechanical issue, staying on the outside border of her foot the entire time. So she needed a specific type of orthotic that would help the arch of her foot meet the ground, so the inside part of her foot that wasn't touching the ground at all, and spread the force of the impact throughout the foot to absorb the load. So, you know, she was skeptical at first because she'd already tried orthotics, so I had to explain how her other one didn't accommodate for her issue. And she could see during the video what I was referring to. So we went ahead and casted her and measured her foot and got the custom orthotics. And she basically was amazed that once she had those orthotics, she could walk and not have any problem. So it did fix it long term. And the reason I wanted to tell this story is because I think patients that I see will often, you know, go to the podiatrist or go to the doctor. And I think that's a great starting point. We, you know, though that is necessary, and they get a medical diagnosis. And for her, her medical diagnosis was peroneal tendonitis, which is overuse of the tendons on the outside of her lower leg. So it's great to get a medical diagnosis. However, to fix the medical diagnosis, like in Amy's case, you really need someone who's good at analyzing movement and can see the big picture. Because she'd tried multiple interventions to fix peroneal tendonitis and none of them worked because none of them really looked at the whole picture of the cause of her medical diagnosis. So it's great to get a medical diagnosis, but in our muscle skeletal body, there can be so many reasons causing the same medical diagnosis, because not every peroneal tendonitis that I see demonstrates what Amy demonstrated. So it's very unique how our bodies can work or not work and create a medical diagnosis that actually needs different types of treatment, from physical therapy to massage therapy to acupuncture to podiatry, you name it. So I wanted to highlight that story, and there's many other stories like that in the book that try to show you, even though you might have a medical diagnosis of knee pain or patellofemoral syndrome or IT band syndrome or piriformis syndrome, you name it, there's lots of different causes that create that problem, and you really have to partner with a physical therapist that can help you solve the different specific issues that cause that medical diagnosis. And Amy couldn't control the kind of foot she was given. She was born with that kind of foot type. Her body had kind of allowed her to get away with that for a long period of her life until her 20s. And then it just couldn't really handle that anymore. So it is interesting. People will often be confused, or they just don't understand how all of a sudden their body type now is creating problems when they've lived with their body type for years. And sometimes it's just a matter of cumulative time. The body can't handle that stress anymore. The book is really trying to show you how different injuries and medical diagnoses and how physical therapy plays a role of just trying to figure out the causes, and the causes can be slightly different. Sometimes they can be similar from the different diagnoses, but you know, one way to prevent injuries is to see a physical therapist annually, every year, and they can do flexibility testing, strength testing, videotape your gait, look at your body structure, your foot type, movement patterns, and can help you put together a plan that's specific to your issues for your body type, and kind of give you a potential list of things that you could be at risk for injury and how to work on those things. So that's more prevention. But also when you do have an injury, really think about, okay, I went to the doctor, they told me I have tendonitis, but they didn't really, and I don't expect the the doctors to have the time to do this. This is where physical therapists excel. You know, they tell you you have tendonitis, but they don't necessarily give you all the causes and reasons for it. That's what physical therapy has the luxury of time to spend with you, because a doctor really only has 10 to 15 minutes max to spend with you to figure out what is going on. And then in terms of physical therapy, our appointments are usually in the 40 minute to 60 minute range, and we have the luxury of time of analyzing movement and thinking and videotaping and playing back and explaining and asking more questions to solve the root of what caused the medical diagnosis. So I'm not saying that physicians are not doing their job. They really are, but then the expertise of solving your medical diagnosis when it comes to muscle skeletal problems and figuring out what caused it and how to prevent it is with physical therapy. It's something you should be aware of and hopefully take advantage of to help solve it. There's another story that I want to tell, and this one has more to do with knee pain, which is really common for both people who walk and people who run. And this one, we'll call her Cindy. And Cindy actually started jogging and running in her 40s. And she did really well increasing her jogging and walking mileage and working on strength training. And then you fast forward to her early 50s and she started to have pain around the kneecap area. And she was diagnosed by her doctor to have patellofemoral syndrome. And it's kind of a wear and tear process that can lead to arthritis in the knee. And she basically started to have pain along the inner part of her knee with running, climbing, or going downstairs, or sitting for a long period of time, like with driving or at work meetings. And she came to our free knee pain workshop and realized that we could help her with using her hips so that her knee wouldn't hurt so much with stairs, squats, and running. So we gave her even just a simple tip. So you can try this if you're having knee pain, of just, you have to lean a little bit forward from her hips so that the center of your body weight is over your knee. And then that will make you use your hip. We kind of call it the hip hinge. And this is something we spend a lot of time on, because if you don't know how to squat and use your hips, you will overuse your knees and wear out your knees and lead to a knee replacement faster. So it is something you should definitely learn, how to hip hinge. It'll protect your knees for a lifetime, and it'll protect your back. Because I think that whole saying of bend with your knees, lift with your knees, it's been around for a long time. There's no way I'm going to be able to change that, but it is something that is wearing out people's knees instead of using their hips. The other thing we found when Cindy attended physical therapy, we videotaped her walking and running and played it back in slow motion. And she could see, and we could see, that she had a scissor pattern, which means when you run, every time you land, like one foot is landing right in front of the other, almost like you're walking on a balance beam. And you're not supposed to be doing that. When you cross over to that degree, it puts a lot more stress on the knees. So we had to keep her, when she would run, to keep her foot right under her leg in a straight line. So if you're standing, you should notice that when you're standing and you look down from your hip, your knee is right underneath your hip and your foot is right underneath your knee. Well, that's how it should be when you run versus trying to cross over like you're running on a balance beam. So she had to watch that in the mirror. Our treadmill's in front of a mirror, and she said, "I feel like I'm trying to run bow-legged." And of course, anything different feels really extreme and odd, but it created less strain to the knee and to her lower leg. The other thing we saw in the slow motion analysis is she would, whichever leg had all the weight on it, when you're balancing, that hip would drop and it would pull on the low back, and the knee would dive kind of inwards towards the middle, and due to the lack of support from above. So this problem took a little bit longer to fix, but we really had her to work on how to control those hips and how to control the knee, especially when all the weight is on one side. So there became a lot of balance type movements for her. And then just learning, watching in front of the mirror when she would run to control that leg. And there were different cues that we'd tell her, you know, pull that knee a little bit out to the side. And she had to kind of figure out her own way of really figuring out how to get her body to keep that knee from diving in. The other thing the video showed is she really would overstride when she would walk or run. So when you have a long stride and you overstride with walking or running, that creates more stress to the knee, so more pain. So we had to train Cindy how to increase her cadence, which is steps per minute. You have to do this correctly or you'll really frustrate yourself. And it can be a very aggravating experience. So you kind of find out what your cadence currently is at, and then you increase that by just 5%. And you want to stay at that for a couple weeks before you really try to increase it again, another 5%. That way your body can adapt and learn, and it's not too big of a change where your cardiovascular system is just overwhelmed, and same with mentally. But that increase in cadence, meaning foot strikes per minute, it then forces you not to let your leg get too far out in front of you and overstride. You basically can't do it. If I tell you, go ahead and strike the ground more often when you're running. So on a treadmill, for example, it works really well because we can set the pace. So let's say it's a 9-minute mile pace. And then I'm have you run at a certain cadence with your foot striking, and I try to have you match the metronome to a higher frequency, the pace per minute isn't changing because we've set that treadmill pace. We've just changed how often you're hitting the ground with your foot striking, and you don't have time to let your foot strike too far out in front of you, so you don't have time to overstride, which means you'll have less stress to the knee and to your whole lower leg. So they found in research at some of the university labs that have these treadmills that are, you know, $100,000 with force plates in them, when they have their runners increase their cadence, there's less stress to the joints. And so that's why there's a big push for people to increase their cadence when they're running or walking. So we work with both runners and walkers on how to do this to decrease stress to the joints. That's another thing we found with Cindy. So hopefully that gives you some idea of how a physical therapist, if they're really looking at your walking and running and videotaping you and playing it back in slow motion, there's so much information to pick up on that really is meaningful and then immediately applicable to helping you. So Cindy did get other exercises to help with strengthening of her hips and her legs. And with her gait, she really had to work on watching herself in the mirror to control that, and same with some balance activities. So over time, she started to experience no pain with stairs, squats, lunges, and even running. And it was funny, she even decided to talk to us about something else with her feet that she didn't tell us in the beginning. Her feet and toes would go numb with cycling despite trying different shoes. So we had to kind of look at her feet a little closer. She had toes that needed a special metatarsal pad under it to unload the metatarsal heads, the ball of the foot, basically. So she wouldn't be placing pressure on the nerves that travel near those bones. And so that relieved the numbness and tingling in her foot while working out. And the only reason I point that out is just, it is not uncommon to come into physical therapy for one thing and get that issue resolved, and then confide in us on something else that's kind of been ongoing that you've just kind of put up with. And then we solve that issue as well. So it's, you know, physical therapists really can be great resources for you to feel better when sometimes you may have felt like other providers may have said, oh yeah, that's just the way it is, or you may have to live with that, or, you know, maybe they offered you something to try, but it really didn't solve it completely. I guess I would just encourage you to keep thinking and analyzing and continue to find someone who will kind of work with you to look at the big picture, and a physical therapist who's well connected in the community with referring you to other specialties. I certainly appreciate the different providers that I've interviewed on my podcast, you know, in terms of acupuncture and nutrition and dealing with obesity and just other, you know, resources to help someone be more mobile and live with less pain and just enjoy life better. So definitely partner with somebody who you think will also help you with referrals to other specialties if you're struggling with other health issues, not just physical therapy. So hopefully those stories kind of show you that whether it's knee pain, hip pain, back pain, Achilles pain, there are multiple causes to those issues. In the book, I talk about some, you know, in terms of the literature and research, like what are some risk factors to developing those diagnoses, and you may have some of those. But then it also arms you with things to do about it and what the literature and research shows to be most successful and helpful for it. But I will say for running and walking, you really need someone who's willing to videotape your gait, your walking, and play it back in slow motion to look at your mechanics, because that's a huge piece of the puzzle and solving all the issues. Because you saw earlier when I was telling you that story, if we didn't look at the walking, we would have never figured out the true cause of her problem. Now we're going to take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsor.
As a listener to the Stay Healthy South Sound podcast, we are offering a 25% discount on our runner's analysis, which includes a slow motion video of your run. To go ahead and schedule your runner's analysis screening today, contact us at 360-456-1444. That's 360-456-1444. Or order online at penrosept.com. And now, back to the show.
Okay, so this next section about the book and a little bit about running and walking is, I wanted to highlight, this book is very practical. And I even go over some ways to test your hip strength, because your hip strength, as I mentioned earlier, is very critical to supporting the knee and the low back. So I'm going to cover a few ways of how you can test your hip strength at home. So first, one thing you can try, if you're able, is a single leg squat, and only go down as comfortable as you can. You don't have to go very far, but can you keep the knee from wobbling side to side when you try to squat down on one leg? And again, you only need to go, you know, even just 6 inches or less. If it wobbles the knee, then you're likely to have some weakness in your hip and thigh. Or does the knee dive to the inside when you squat down? So if you want to just do a sit to stand out of a chair with, so that you're doing both legs, watch what your knees do. If your knees come together at all, you have hip and thigh weakness. And it'll be a matter of time until something starts bothering you, whether it's your knee, whether it's your hip, whether it's your back. This test is a little bit harder. The next one is, it's a single leg jump. So if you hop on one leg and the knee dives to the inside towards the other leg, this is another screening tool to demonstrate the weakness of the hip and they're not strong enough to keep the knee in correct alignment and minimize stress. And then you're at a higher risk for injury to the knee, especially an athlete. So try to stand up. Here's another test. Try to stand up from a chair. So you're seated and you stand up and see if your knee goes inward coming up and wobbles from side to side. So again, another simple test. If your knee dives inward, you have hip weakness. You can also just watch yourself going up and down the stairs. If your knee tends to dive inwards or wobbles from side to side, you have hip weakness. So basically, I think you're probably getting the idea that if you see that knee dive in, you likely have some hip weakness. And if you don't have knee pain already, it's a matter of time and you will. And only just to provide some evidence, there's a study that I allude to. Actually, there's several studies in the book that I allude to, but this one evaluated 20 females with patellofemoral pain, so knee pain syndrome, compared to healthy female controls during single leg squats, running, and then repetitive single leg jumps, and they were looking at 3D movements of the legs were recorded. And so what they noticed is during the single leg stance and single leg squats, the knee and thigh would dive to the inside towards the other leg. With those that had knee pain showed greater displacement of that knee going inward during those single leg squats compared to those that didn't have knee pain symptoms. So in other words, those without knee pain were able to perform those single leg squats with better form and alignment, keeping their knee over their ankle and not wobbling side to side. So if you're a runner, you really should be able to perform a single leg squat with correct form and not allow that hip or knee to dive toward the inside of the leg. And as a walker, you should be able to perform at least the sit to stand out of a chair without letting the knee dive inwards or wobble. So it's a useful measurement tool and an exercise. It shouldn't hurt while performing the exercise in terms of the single leg squat or the sit to stand out of the chair. If it does, then you really need to learn how to use your hip and thigh not to stress your knee joint. And I would say 95% of the patients that I've seen over my 20 years, they do not know how to perform squats or single leg squats or lunges using their hips and thighs versus their knees. That's usually a major component of teaching correct movement. It's just been around so long, the whole bend with your knees, that it's a hard movement pattern to break. So you can think about when the chair is a great tool. So when you're standing in front of the chair and you sit down, really think about getting those hips way back there to sit down to the chair. Don't let your knees go over your toes and keep your back straight. So your chest can drop forward so you don't feel like you're falling over backwards. You lean forward from the hip though, not bending the back or your back will hurt. Sometimes I have to put a cushion in the chair to make it not so deep of a squat and have patients gain strength in a shorter range before they can go to a deeper range. So there's lots of ways physical therapists can modify things so that you can get stronger without irritating the joints. And so if you've been frustrated in the past with trying physical therapy and you just seem to get aggravated with the exercises, it may be that those exercises needed to be modified, and hopefully you went back to the physical therapist and told them that those weren't working and you needed a different approach and that they were willing to work with you to problem solve the movement and the mechanics to find which exercises would work and which ones not to do anymore. So sometimes that can take a few sessions. And I certainly learned over the years that not every patient comes back to tell me that those exercises, some of the exercises were irritating and not helpful. I've learned to ask better questions and to give better instructions. And hopefully you will be willing to go back and give better feedback and better analysis of the exercises. And you just start to really learn more about your body. So hopefully you'll find someone to partner with so that you can have less pain, whether it's in your knees, your hips, your feet, your back, whatever that might be. And hopefully you're also seeing how everything is connected. So sometimes the problem in your knee and leg can be related to your foot structure and that your foot needs to be addressed properly before the knee pain will go away. So the book basically kind of tries to go through each body part. Like I said, each chapter is designated to a different body part. And I try to really define the medical diagnosis and what it means in terms that you understand. And then store patient stories like I described today to give you a better handle on how we look at the whole picture and give you a better idea of how we come to all the problems that are causing that medical diagnosis and then how we intervene and correct it going forward. And then in the, like I said, the book has practical tests and practical exercises and stretches and pictures in it. So it really was a work of wanting to give good information out there for both people that walk or run or dealing with different common problems such as knee pain, Achilles tendonitis, piriformis, hip bursitis, low back pain. That has a pretty big section because that's a fairly common thing we see in our clinic. And almost every one of us has had back pain at one point in our lives. So it was definitely something it took years to put this book together, to be quite honest. In fact, you'll probably laugh at this, which is probably a good thing to share. I started it when I was on bed rest with my second kid, who is now 10. And then I put it aside for a while and then picked it back up again when I was on bed rest with my third kid, who's now 9. And then I put it away for quite a while and joined a group, a business group of physical therapists, and they were starting, many in the group were starting to write books. And I thought, well, I have one I've started, I just never finished. And I remember one of my friends who had strongly encouraged me to write a book for runners, I'm like, oh, I have most of it there, I just need to finish it and also tell better stories in it so that it's more relatable versus how academic it was in the beginning. Because in physical therapy school, you're used to writing all about the evidence and the literature and the research. And I think that's why I never could quite get to the point of publishing it, is I didn't think it would speak to the common person. So going back through it and adding the stories in, the patient stories, and making it more relatable, I think it makes it more readable and people can really take pieces from it and learn from it and find themselves in the stories. So I am thankful that I just kept putting it aside, knowing somehow it just wasn't quite, I don't know, right for the public, but not really knowing how to finish it. And then that the business group I was a part of, that's how they were writing their books, and it helped me outline this book better to be relatable and readable and very practical and helpful. So that's the story of how this book came to be. And I continue to run to this day. I don't run as long as I used to. I had my own herniated disc and low back surgery in 2013. So I have a very minimal disc left between L5 and S1. So I can run, 5 to 8 miles, but a slow pace, but enjoyable, and maybe walk intermittently, and have taken up more strength training and just trying to have a more balanced, complete strength with my upper body, good posture, good hip flexibility, strong hips, strong core. And I find that those workouts, if I do them correctly, I get an aerobic workout at the same time. And I find that I just have better strength for everyday life to keep up with my 3 boys, and I feel better. So I've moved more towards a full body strength and conditioning, including flexibility and range of motion through those workouts, and then continued some run walking for enjoyment. And I just feel like I have a just more balanced body, and I feel better. But I enjoy running and walking and hiking, and I want to be able to continue to hike. We just got back from a trip in Utah, renting an RV and exploring Zion and Bryce Canyon and the Arches and Canyonlands. And, we walked, I don't know, sometimes 5 to 8 miles a day, and I'm not, and carrying, our packs with water, et cetera. And I had no pain. I was grateful for that I can still do that and want to keep doing that. So anyway, that hopefully highlights a little bit of my book called Run Forever, Secrets to Common Running and Walking Injuries. It's on Amazon. You can get it on the Kindle or paperback. I do have it in stock in my clinic as well for less. And I plan to have a book signing event, but with COVID, that will be determined at a later date. But if you get on our email list, we will send that out. The website is penrosept.com. And there's a blog on there where I have helpful tips every week on whether it's knee pain, back pain, hip pain, balance, osteoporosis, neck pain, shoulder pain, etc. And we have a newsletter that goes out every week as well. So if there's things, if you want to stay in touch with us and know when our free workshops are, or just be on the newsletter or the blog, you can sign up for those things on the website as well. And there's free tips reports on our website that you can download immediately for knee pain and back pain and hip pain and runner injuries specifically. It's a little, the runner's report is a little kind of smaller, I don't know if it's about 5 or 10 pages of some of the things that are in the book. So again, it's a privilege to keep the South Sound mobile and pain-free. We'd be happy to help. And I hope you partner with someone who really looks at the whole picture. And hopefully this podcast and the book highlight how a medical diagnosis can actually have many different causes. And it may take you seeing a couple different providers to get to the root cause. Thanks. And stay healthy.
Thank you for listening to the Stay Healthy South Sound podcast, brought to you by Penrose and Associates Physical Therapy. If you want some free tips to implement right away on various problems like knee pain, back pain, running injuries, and many more issues, then jump on over to penrosept.com and download the free report that fits your needs. You will receive helpful tips right away and have the choice to email in for further questions and set up a free phone consultation. You can reach us at 360-456-1444 and info@penrosept.com. You can stay connected with us at stayhealthysouthsound.com and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you next time on the Stay Healthy South Sound podcast.